Greetings, Scotch potatoes across the country, around the world, and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr.
And I'm Elizabeth Rapp, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies.
Yes, we have Rattlesnake Rapp with us today. That's a total joke that nobody gets, but I think it's a cool name. It's a cool nickname. And anyone who knows you through Twitter or the work that you've written out on the web and various sites, they know that you love Westerns.
I do love Westerns, but I'm afraid of rattlesnakes.
Who isn't afraid of rattlesnakes?
No one, I guess.
Who's the rattlesnake whisperer? Is like, oh, look at the rattlesnake. Let's snuggle.
I saw a guy on Martha Stewart, and he was like, don't kill rattlesnakes. They're beautiful creatures. I was like, but they bite, and they might kill my dog. Like, I don't actively go out and kill them, but beneficial to my
great
backyard.
Great white sharks are beautiful creatures, but I'm fully afraid of them. If I were swimming in the ocean and I see one of them coming to me, I wouldn't be like, oh, hey, sweetie.
Hey, what's up? Come here.
Ow! There goes my spleen. Anyways, welcome, Elizabeth, to the show. This is the first time you've been on.
Yeah, so I'm so excited.
Good to have you here. It's always nice to have a fresh, fresh new face, but a fresh new voice on the show. So welcome to your inaugural appearance on Fat Guys at the Movies. You and I actually, do you realize we're Golden Briefcase Nemesis? Did you know this?
Yeah, aren't we like neck and neck as far as like how many times we've appeared?
That's right, I think we've both been on the show 3 times.
Yeah.
So
I had the lead like briefly, but you caught up.
I don't remember exactly what, I know you were talking, I think it was award season because you were talking about, when True Grit came out, you were on.
Yeah,
I
did the Western one was the last one I did. So
yeah, so we're,
I was being heckled from the next room by my family. You're not mentioning 3:10 to Yuma, like
oh,
so hard.
Shame on them, but now, guys from the Golden Briefcase, we're just sitting here twiddling our thumbs, waiting for our next guest spot. So
we need to, I think, you know, we need to maybe be on together and do like a death match.
That's right. Yeah. We should have like a, I don't know, some sort of geek trivia or something like that.
Yeah. You'd probably win. You watch like way more, like even you live tweet. It's like, you beat me on like some Conan the Barbarian question. I'd be like, what?
Well, let's just say there are certain elements of the female anatomy that I do know more about in movies like Conan the Barbarian.
Yeah, I think I know. I don't think I'm going to forget like your comments on Grace Jones for... I'm gonna probably watch that movie going craning my neck.
she is a warped she was in A View to a Kill with Roger Moore, and it was like this geriatric James Bond and freaky Grace Joan, who in the 80s you didn't know what her deal was. And I was like 14 when I saw that movie, and I'm like, I have no idea what's going on. I'm so confused right now.
Well, I remember, I don't have a lot of specific memories of A View to a Kill, but I think I saw pictures of her, and I think it was the same thing. Like, I thought about Bea Arthur. I thought Bea Arthur was a man pretending to be a golden girl.
You picked about the most un-Grace Jonesy person ever who's existed in Hollywood to compare to Grace Jones.
So I mean, like, when you see those pictures of Grace Jones, I imagine if I saw Conan, I probably thought it was a man pretending to be a woman. Like, sadly, I mean, Grace Jones is lovely in her own way, but, you know, she's kind of masculine looking. She's kind of androgynous. It's like part of her appeal. So, you know, I imagine I was very confused in the 80s, like, who that was. Like, I probably thought it was, like, you know...
Who knows?
A basketball player or something.
A very short, tiny basketball. You want to have your mind blown?
Yeah.
She's like going to be eligible for Social Security in like 2 years.
Yeah, I think I just saw a picture of her, and they were like, oh, it's her like 60th birthday or something. I was like, oh my God.
She could still like devour my arm, and that would be oddly sensual. Anyways, talk real quick. We'll tell you how to get a hold of us. FatGuysAtTheMovies.com. You can go to iTunes and search Fat Guys at the Movies, and we pop up. You can go to Facebook at FGATM for Fat Guys at the Movies. You can email us, FatGuys@FilmSchoolRejects.com, or you can call us and leave a voicemail, 740-205-6456. Actually, want to give a real quick congratulations to Ken from New York and Michael from North Carolina. They were our April Fool's Day winners for knowing and taking the time and energy to actually reverse the episode, which, of course, was playing backwards. But real quick, Elizabeth, tell us what you do if people don't know who you are and where you where you can find your stuff.
I work primarily, I work for several sites, but my number one homes are Chud.com and Film.com. Yes. So.
Cool. We live tweeted Chud a couple weeks ago. The original
live tweeting the site would be really weird.
It would take a long time.
Be a lot okay, of you know, gonna... a lot of my random obsessions that week, you know.
Or we'll be like, oh, look, here's a news about Spider-Man 3 casting.
Yeah. Look, Ren has written a post. So is Elizabeth. Joshua Miller is thinking about this.
There you go.
Sadly, you know, from my site being named Chud, I've never seen that movie. Like, I don't know if I should confess that, but...
You're not missing out.
That's kind of what I thought.
Chud is one of those movies that it's this bizarre footnote in 80s horror films, but it's not exactly... You know, I mean, it's not like you're like, I haven't seen Gone with the Wind. Oh, you've never seen Gone with the Wind?
Yeah.
No, not like that, no.
So. Yeah, nobody's gonna hold my feet to the fire on that. Like, what are you doing writing about film?
Yeah, how could you have not seen Chud and write about film and call yourself an expert? Shame on you. Anyways, let's talk about we've got a bunch of movies opening this week. The first one we got to talk about is Soul Surfer, and it's the true story of a young girl who's a surfing champion who survives a shark attack.
Can you believe we get to come out here every day?
Call 911.
Teenage girl from the North Shore, shark attack.
Traumatic amputation, still lost blood.
The things that you're gonna have to learn to do differently is extensive.
I don't understand.
I don't know why terrible things happen to us sometimes, but I have to believe that something good is gonna come out of this.
You didn't see this.
Right? I didn't see it, no.
Yeah. I had a chance to see it. It stars Anna Sophia Robb, who is, she was in, like, Race to Witch Mountain, mm-hmm. and she was in The Reaping, and she was in Bridge to Terabithia. Very pretty girl who she's a really good actress, too.
She's actually from here, from Colorado, I believe.
Oh, is she?
Yeah.
No kidding.
I'm going to be kids and like, email, no, you're wrong about that, but I remember.
No, she's not. You idiot.
You're
how you call yourself?
A,
first of all, you don't know where Anna Sophia Robb is. Second of all, you haven't seen Chud. What is your problem? Rattlesnake. I think she's going to be a big actress. I mean, she's made it kind of through her awkward stage, so she doesn't look weird. You know, some kids, they grow and they do sort of a Fred Savage where they just don't look right once they grow up.
Yeah, I think the Culkins almost like universally that family went through that. Yeah.
I blame Michael Jackson on that. Oh, did I just say that out loud? This movie is like a Fox Faith movie. It kind of feels that like TV movie. It's an inspirational movie. Lays it on a little bit thick. It's kind of like putting sugar on Frosted Flakes. You know, it's already supposed to be
a dash of syrup over a bowl of corny corn.
Yeah. So I mean, it is. But you know, if you like that sort of thing, it's cool. I mean, it's sort of like a TV movie with some better special effects. Because of course they have to. You know, she gets her arm bitten off. That's kind of the story.
Spoiler alert.
It's a story about a girl with a shark attack, and there's a big bite taken out of the surfboard on the beach. So it happens. You know, I enjoyed it for a little bit. It wasn't fantastic, but I mean, it's not my kind of movie necessarily. So I don't know. Kind of for the fat guy's grade, I'm gonna give it a right on the border. Kind of sucks. Kind of rocks. And with that, we're going to go to a break. Welcome back to Fat Guys in the Movies. We kind of had to jump out of that last segment because we spent more time talking about, I don't know.
Grace Jones.
Grace Jones and very inappropriate things. Oh, we already started on the show on this one early, so get ready, people. One thing I think is funny about Soul Surfer, one last little thing, is because it's all the surfing, they always just have regular surfers. This is something that I would focus on. And they always digitally replace her face with the actors because, you know, you're not going to teach Anna Sophia Robb to do these awesome, you know, surfing things. And, you know, Anna Sophia, she's 15, 16. She's younger and she's a little girl there. And then suddenly they cut to the body double, which has her face, but her chest is like way bigger.
Jeez.
So you're like, that's definitely not her surfing.
Maybe they should just go like old school, like they used to do in the 50s, and like just put them up against like a green screen and like rock them back.
Rear projection? You'd be like going back to Roger Moore and the James Bond days?
Yeah.
He said they're like, he's like, you see this guy do this great stunt where they jump off in their parachute. And then there's Roger Moore standing there with strings against a video of clouds. And you're like, he's not even anywhere close to the sky.
What is that?
I'm offended. This is just, who fell for that? For crying out
loud. I want
my
money back.
Exactly. The next movie we're going to talk about is Hannah. And this, a girl trained for combat by her father enters a dangerous espionage mission.
You were half asleep.
I'll do better next time.
Tell me again.
Adapt or die.
Think on your feet.
Even while I'm sleeping. I'm ready.
All you have to do is flip that switch.
It tells Mr. Riegler where we are.
Only you can get close enough.
She won't stop until you're dead. Or she is.
Come and find me.
Marissa, we picked up an unencrypted signal below the Arctic Circle. We think it's Eric Heller.
Heller is a rogue asset. I propose we go in and pull him out. We need to keep this contained, gentlemen.
Papa.
Remember what I taught you, you'll be fine.
Again, this is one you didn't get a chance to see.
Yeah, I don't know when my screening was.
And it's my fault, too, because I asked you a little bit late to get this. You probably didn't get a chance to start making sure you found out where screenings were.
Well, hey, it wasn't on this week's schedule. That's all I know. Like, even if you'd asked me last week,
I don't know. I'm sure it's out there somewhere. Are you looking forward to this one? You've mentioned it a couple times.
Yeah, I'm actually really looking forward to it. I'm a big fan of Joe Wright's work, and I'm really curious. It's kind of sad because I feel like it's almost like Eric Bana's last. You know, like remember how he was like the action hero, like primed, and now he's playing the dad to the action hero. Like, it's kind of sad.
The way you were saying it, I thought of like, is he going to die or something?
No, isn't even why I like wanted to see it, but it occurred to me like as I was watching these last couple of trailers, and the focus is like rightfully on her, but I was like, wow, he's now the dad to like the lethal assassin. Like, you know, the guy that was like the Hulk, the next big thing is now like, but no, I'm really excited about it. I think it looks like a really, interesting, you know, fresh sort of action movie. And I'm sort of curious to see what the reaction's going to be to it because, you know, over the last, like, I guess year, last year we had the whole sort of Kick-Ass controversy with Hit Girl. And was it appropriate for a girl that young to be engaging in such violent behavior? And then this year was the whole Sucker Punch debacle, you know, and I'm kind of curious how this is going to be received and how it's going to be discussed. And, you know, are we going to see some sort of like watershed moment of, you know, action girls or young action girls, or is it just going to be like a blip? I'm really curious about it from that point of view now.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know how well it's going to do simply because do you remember how last year Edward Zwick, who's known for doing very artistic movies or very, very, very serious films like Defiance and The Last Samurai and stuff, and they did Love and Other Drugs, and it was like billed as like a quirky romantic comedy, and it wasn't, but it was basically this art house version of a romantic comedy.
Yeah,
this is sort of like Joe Wright, who's known for doing Pride and Prejudice and Atonement, so he's not an action guy, and he does this action movie, and it's almost like he says, I'm going to show you guys how to really do an action movie. He doesn't quite do it right. And I personally thought it was a bit disjointed, and there were some issues with the story and kind of how it all fits together. And almost any scenes, especially the action scenes, you can take any of those, lift it, and it looks fantastic, and it works. It also has a fantastic soundtrack by the Chemical Brothers, which is really the best part of the film. But the movie itself, it's not quite cohesive, not to the level that like Sucker Punch was, but it's just, I don't know, it's just lacking something. It seems like it's an action movie done by somebody who really doesn't understand how to do an action movie.
Yeah, or maybe it was. And I feel like this sometimes when I don't think action movies, let me stress this, are slumming it. But I sometimes feel like when, and I guess I would apply this to Cate Blanchett, who I love and I will not, criticize and don't read it as a bad thing. Like when I feel like when she does say, like, when she wants to cut loose and do, like, a fun movie, she chose what they call a fourth Indiana Jones movie, but what I refuse to believe is. And it's sort of like,
that's okay. No, hey, just, trust me, I'm not, this is not the first time somebody's disagreed with me about Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull.
But it's sort of like, you know, they, sometimes I think a really intellectual, gifted, instinctual actor doesn't quite maybe know what constitutes like a good action script or a good popcorn script. And I know there's some other, you know, examples that I could think of, and I'm, Cate Blanchett's only coming to mind because she's in Hannah, and I almost wonder if that might be the case with Joe Wright, because it seems like a really cerebral, costume piece, you know, lots of more about feeling than like a tightly structured, you know.
Yeah, well, it's very, it has a real European, all of his movies, with the exception of The Soloist, which was kind of...
I keep forgetting what the title of that one was, because I want to call it Music and Lyrics for some reason.
Totally different view. Although I think
I was about to say, like, well, I'm a fan of all Joe Wright's except Music and Lyrics.
I would love to see a mashup of The Soloist and Music and Lyrics, where like Hugh Grant is played by Jamie Foxx as a schizophrenic celloist trying to write songs with Drew Barrymore. That would be awesome.
Trying to. Or like Hugh Grant as like a homeless, you know, pop idol, like just singing out his heart on a street corner.
And that's when we have just written the perfect. We have to call up Hollywood. We have it. We're going to retire off of this script.
Sorry, this is the last podcast you'll hear us on, suckers.
Yeah, broadcast. Just wait. It's coming out next summer, coming 2012. Don't worry. you know, here there is a very European feel to Hannah. It feels like an import movie. It feels like something that was made in France or Italy.
Yeah, and the trailers very much have that English vibe. Yeah. And I think that I've had some people come to me and be like, I don't get it. Do you know what that movie's about? And I'm like, I thought it was obvious. It's about an assassin. You know?
It's pretty clear, but it has those subcontext, that subtext and other, and some weirdness. And when I say like European, it's this weirdness to it that like doesn't quite make sense to just your standard American.
Yeah, there's a definite flavor that European thrillers have, and it's hard to define. It's a sensibility.
Yeah.
And, you know, a tweak. Something's not quite right.
So with that said, I'm still going to say Hannah kind of sucks, because I mean, the soundtrack's awesome and the action scenes are pretty cool, but sort of the rest of the film is sort of, I don't know.
It's funny because it's always one of those movies, like it's initially like the Twitter, you know, I'm basing my reactions on Twitter, but like the reviews that have come out are like calling it the first great movie of 2011. And I'm sort of waiting, because now the bar was set really high with those first reactions. Now we're going to see like this backlash of
that. Always happens when they do a lot of early press for
they
stuff.
They do. Yeah. And I'm kind of curious. And now, as always, I'm always, like, with, just like with Sucker Punch, I'm like, then I'm just like even more eager to see it. And now it doesn't even become about the film. It becomes about the reaction. And that is, wrong.
I have a feeling a lot of people are going to go see this movie and they'll kind of come out and be like,
that was okay. Yeah.
Real quick, we'll introduce the next one. We're going to go to a break pretty soon after this, but it's Your Highness, in which Danny McBride stars with Oscar winner Natalie Portman and Oscar nominee Jane Franco in this Oscar, non-Oscar nominated spoof of Knights on a Quest.
Your brother is about to embark on a quest.
The evil wizard Lazar has taken my love.
You must journey with your brother to rescue his bride.
Can I sleep on it?
I shouldn't even be here. I will probably die on this quest. Courtney definitely will.
If we work together, we can destroy Lazar once and for all.
With our huge muscles, we shall protect you.
Oh, really?
Oh, really?
That didn't really go as planned.
We got about 30 seconds here, so tell us real quick, and then we'll talk a little bit more about it, but initial reaction? You saw this.
There's some parts I laughed about, but I think it's, the best thing I can say about it is it just doesn't work to me. I wanted to say, I was just gonna say it's kind of dumb, but it does have more brains, so dumb isn't really a good description, but it just kind of, it falls flat.
Okay. Well, we'll hear more about it when we come back from the next break.
10 miles of hard road, 33 years of tough luck, 44 skulls buried in the ground, crawling down through the muck. Oh yeah.
And welcome back to Fat Guys in the Movies. We just came out talking a little bit about Your Highness, but there wasn't a whole lot of room. I didn't get a chance to see it, so I want to hear more of what you thought, Elizabeth.
Well, I was. And I mean, somebody, yeah, right. And somebody's going to probably like knock me like, well, your expectations shouldn't have been that. But I think I was expecting more of like a Tropic Thunder level of fantasy satire. And I think what my problem with it is that it didn't reach the humor, or it banged too much on it. Like, because what's funny about like the 80s fantasy movies, it's always the unintentional camp, you know, the unintentional humor.
Oh, yeah.
You know, David Bowie's massive codpiece and what were they thinking and stuff. And it's like...
they were thinking fabulous. Yeah. Right there.
Right there. Can we make it tighter?
You want to see my Ziggy Stardust?
And so I think that, to me, that the film only worked when it sort of used the same sly cues. Like, I thought when it played it very sincere and sort of used that stuff in the background, or, like, I thought that for some reason I thought the music was really funny, and a lot of, like, the costumes and James Franco's, like, expressions and the way he really does it, like, very Orlando Bloom-ish, very sincere. Like, that stuff was funnier than the actual script. I did not think the script and the jokes worked at all.
Okay.
I mean, there's a few lines that are really good, and I was laughing about them the next morning, and I was telling my mom about, you know, was it funny? Oh, this part was funny, this part was funny. But the best parts were definitely in that Red Band trailer. Like, that's, like, a really sharp version of what the movie is. Yeah. And the
You can actually say that now. This segment's not on the radio, so
okay.
if you want to say bad language, you
bad
can.
Bad language, yeah. And I think that, and actually the Red Band trailer probably hurts the movie, because I think one of the best visual gags is that little puppet, and that would have been way better to see that cold, because like,
well, that's the way Paul was. I mean, Paul, the best jokes were in fact in the trailer.
Yeah.
And if you knew them going in, they were still funny, but they would have been shockingly funny.
Yeah. And I think that was a scene, and I felt like, and I had two friends that I saw it with, and we were talking about it afterwards, and we thought, like, even the stuff that we thought was funny, like the weed smoking puppet, mm-hmm. ended up carrying the joke too far, like, and I don't know if you've seen
that's
the one.
A fine line. That's a because sometimes you can carry a joke too far and then go beyond it, and then it becomes funny again.
Yeah, and then to me it went too far and never looped back into funny. And I don't want to get into spoilers, but the scene with the little puppet, and some of this has been in the trailer where they have to kiss him, you know, for information, and then. It goes further and further.
I've been there before, let me tell you.
Yeah. It goes further and further and further and further into that kind of a joke. And it's like, well, that's not funny. And it's actually, what does make it funny is that there are some references later that are like, oh my God, that's, yeah. And I laughed about it afterwards. But, and they do it a couple of times with some sight gags and stuff. And it's like, you didn't need to keep waving that particular prop around or whatever, because...
I know the prop you're talking. I saw your conversation with Rudy Obias.
Yes, yes. that was the prop, and it was, and there's actually a lot of, yeah. I mean, it's mostly a dick and weed jokes movie, and that's not a bad thing. But in this, with it being a fantasy movie, it didn't work.
Not to besmirch the quality of dick and weed joke movies.
Not to besmirch that fine, upstanding genre. Pun not intended. But it's like the stuff that's funniest to me was the fantasy movie stuff. The stuff that you're like, oh my God, that's from Labyrinth, or oh, that's totally a reference to Willow, or the music, or some of Natalie Portman's very straight, sincere, over-the-top violent lines. Like, that stuff was funny. The weed jokes got, like, really... You know, it was funny in the first few minutes or in the context of the little wizard, but then, oh, another weed joke or, you know. Oh,
well,
another.
I mean, with a name like Your Highness, you can expect a lot of weed jokes. With name Your Highness with Danny McBride and James Franco.
And James Franco definitely looks stoned for much of the film, once again.
I mean, all you need is, like, Kevin Smith to show up, and then you've got your complete dick and weed joke.
You know, I think what it was is, like, they were expressly referring it to it as, like, ganja or, I mean, using... And when I don't care that it's, I'm not going to go, oh my God, they wouldn't have had this slang in this medieval kingdom. But I think it's like when the people that make the Lord of the Rings jokes about like Hobbit weed and stuff, it's funnier because you watch Lord of the Rings and sort of wink, wink, nudge, nudge. Yes, they're getting high, but it's not explicit. And I thought Your Highness carried it to the part of, yeah, I'm smoking my bong, you know? Like, it was like, oh, that's not funny. Like,
yeah.
I don't know. It was funny.
Well, you know what? It's like, it's like for me, like certain profanity in movies. If you just throw down an F-bomb, it's not funny.
Yeah.
But if you can make it funny, to use another Paul reference, when Kristen Wiig was swearing without real swear words sometimes, just dirty words, that was funnier than her just saying, ah, fuck that. You know what I mean?
And I thought
I don't know that, why she talks like, I don't know why she talks like Edgar,
she does.
Edgar G. Robinson for some reason. Hey, see? Let's go down here, see?
I thought that, yeah, the script relied a lot on, yeah, isn't it funny that we're using, you know, fuck and shit and wearing, you know, medieval armor and that wouldn't be what they say. And it's like, yeah, but you have to make, yeah, the dropping of it has to be really funny. I mean, just having Danny McBride go fuck isn't that funny. I mean, maybe it's funny once, but it's not funny repeatedly.
Yeah. Now, if he was like a child, like if he was six, it would be funny.
Yeah.
Like once.
Or if it was Matthew Broderick and Lady Hawk, it might actually be funny.
That would have been great. The middle of Lady Hawk. He's like, what the fuck? Whoa. Watch your language around my woman. It's a hawk. It's not your woman. It's a hawk. I'm sorry.
Yeah, there are a lot of moments that really work. I just don't, I think the in-between falls flat, and I was expecting something like Tropic Thunder that was just a lot more sharper on...
How did it compare to Pineapple Express, though?
I didn't like Pineapple Express that well. And again, my favorite part was... It's weird because he's like so on the outs at the moment with the public. But James Franco and Bubby and his whole thing, his whole shtick in that movie. And at the end with, you know, the little, yeah, I want to be the middle piece with the jaggedy edges. Like, that made me laugh really hard.
So wait, James Franco's, is he kind of on the way out?
Well,
I thought he's still kind of on the way up, don't you?
Well, yeah, I was just thinking about, like, maybe it's like some of the blogs I read about the James Franco backlash, you know, and like, I'm sick of James Franco, and he shut down his Twitter account, and they're like, that means he's over, and...
Well, Miley Cyrus shut down her Twitter account. I don't know what that means.
Comparable.
I don't know whether that supports my argument or it completely decimates it. It's one of the two.
But yeah, if there is a James Franco, I don't know. We talked about this before, offline, about how like hysterical people are getting about everything these days. So
people just need more excitement in their life.
Yeah, and I can't.
That's why this show exists.
Yay.
To provide that for you.
So yeah, I think. Probably, like, it is best described as a medieval Pineapple Express.
Okay.
And for some people, that's going to really, really work. I think if you go in expecting, like, yeah, more of a, just a really good satire that kind of folds in on itself and becomes, like, a, you know, actual, I don't know, because Tropic Thunder didn't really do that. It's like, it didn't really become an action movie in its own right. It just kept sending itself up further and further and further. And I didn't feel like Your Highness ever really hit that. It just referencing things and then, you know, throwing in a weed joke and I don't know.
When I first saw the trailers for this, the first thing I thought was year one in medieval times.
Yeah, and it kind of has that too. Like there's just sort of a laconic thing to it that I'm not sure works. And also the action scenes. I mean, the action scenes are done like sort of deadly serious, and that kind of throws it off a little bit. Like I think if you take in the sort of more ridiculous angle of like maybe like a Tropic Thunder where, you know, Danny McBride's character supposedly does not know how to fight, yet by the end there's actually like a pretty decent fantasy battle going.
See, I think David Gordon Green is a closet action action junkie. I know for a fact he loves like Michael Bay, because Neil and I interviewed him back when what was it, Dark Snow something, Cold Snow or something like that. Came out right before Pineapple Express. It was really, really small indie with Kate Beckinsale and Sam, what's his name from Moon? Sam Rockwell.
What was the name of that? Yeah, it is something really weird like that. God, I'm blanking on it.
Not
too.
Dead Snow. But yeah, it's something like that. It's but we interviewed him for that, and David's like, he's like, no, I absolutely love my he loves Michael Bay. So I think maybe secretly he wants to be Michael Bay, which is why. He just needs to do a solid action movie and kind of get away from the comedy.
Yeah, and I think that Your Highness felt like they... And I know that's sort of the hot thing when they make these sort of spoofs or that they want to make like a sincere... like a real satire, but then a solid action picture in its own right. And it's like, I don't think you can do it. It doesn't work. And I thought Pineapple Express tried to do that too hard, and that's why it didn't strike me as very funny.
I think you can, but you got to do it the way like Beverly Hills Cop did back in 1984.
Yeah, I think you got to go with the 80s thing and actually take the action as seriously and kind of have like that underlying menace that there is some weight to this. And the wisecracks are kind of a cover-up for the fact that, you know, there's serious stuff going down in the city or something. And the 80s hit that balance really well, and I think we're so busy, like, winking and nudging, and did you get where that reference was from, that it doesn't really work to kind of do the action comedy thing? Because, you know, because they're so busy, like, you know, do you recognize that from Lethal Weapon? And it's like, well, I do. Well, here's sincere action scene.
So what's your official Fat Guys grade for this? Rocks, kind of rocks, sucks, kind of sucks.
I would say kind of rocks. I mean, because there are...
Kind of rocks?
Yeah,
okay.
Kind of rocks,
so
kind of
recommend,
sucks.
Ultimately, or right on the cusp?
Right on the cusp, because I could definitely, I mean... The three of us agreed that we thought it was funnier because we saw it for free, which is not the which Kevin Smith would say is not appropriate. We all thought if we paid full price for it, you know, we would have been disappointed.
Okay.
But then there were other people on Twitter, smaller critics, they got out of the same screening the same day that were like, oh my god, it's the funniest thing, it's totally worth seeing. So. And they were generally people who loved Pineapple Express. So it's kind of like, it's sort of like where you fell on that movie that kind of is going to determine where you fall on this one, I think.
Okay.
I don't know.
Cool. All right. Well, let's move on to the next one, which is Arthur. We're backlogged on DVDs or movie reviews, so we're going to get these out of the way in the middle segment because we can go as long as we want to on this one. But this is Arthur. Russell Brand plays an alcoholic millionaire heir who falls in love with a girl from Queens.
Aww. Morning, Arthur.
Hello, Hobson.
You're going to marry Susan Johnson.
Hello, Arthur.
What was that?
A French kiss.
Really?
Because the French always surrender. That was decidedly German.
Your mother will see you now.
Arthur, to what do I owe the pleasure?
I don't want to marry Susan.
Fine.
You are cut off.
Cut off from the...
The money.
I think I could live without the money. I am a grown man.
Did you see the original, Arthur?
I think I saw it as a kid, and I don't think I
saw it as a kid.
Yeah, I'm
let's
not
take
sure.
her to the alcoholic movie.
Oh man, my parents didn't like restrict me at all. It's kind of shameful. Like I saw Lethal Weapon at 3.
Do you even get Lethal Weapon at 3? I mean,
no, you don't. I remember.
I like that. I'm too old for this shit. You're 3.
Well, my sister, this is no joke. My sister used to actually roll up her sleeve and go, "I'm Mr. Joshua." When you prompted her,
I
realize now that that must have really warped my psyche because
she walks into school, she's burning the bottom of her arm.
Yeah.
She's like, "Just try it."
Yeah,
I have such
I
loyalty.
In the leather jacket and like you know, hate God back. It's what I do.
That's funny.
But I think it warped out my psyche as far as men because I kind of that whole like Mel Gibson torture scene is sort of like weird.
Yeah,
I liked his hair and he's like yeah.
Why is he screaming, Molly? He's glistening so pretty. Why is he screaming?
Yeah, it's like I found that scene kind of hot, but then also scary. So. Wow. And I didn't.
It's amazing what warps you because I talked earlier about because I was 14 when I saw A View to a Kill and I saw Grace Jones having sex with geriatric Roger Moore. But like the original Clash of the
Full
Titans
circle.
Was like the first movie I ever saw boobs in, and it was like the holy grail. I was like, oh my god, those are boobs. Or it was actually just a boob because she was breastfeeding, but her other boob was just hanging out between the boobs.
I can't think. See, it sucks because there's like nothing comparable. I mean, like, because guys are shirtless in films, and you know, it's acceptable for guys to be, you know, when you're playing on the playground and boys can take off their shirts. It's not really the same thing. But I can honestly, I remember like my mom let me see, A Room with a View fairly young, and that has a lot of guys running around naked, full frontal.
Oh, okay.
And it seems.
But see, that's not the same though, because that just looks silly.
Yeah, so you're just going like, oh, those guys are naked. Like, it's not
flopping
the same.
Around.
It isn't the same at all, and it's presented as comedic and. But yeah,
I mean,
no
I challenge anybody to find me the male version of the Basic Instinct interrogation scene.
Yeah, I mean, other than maybe Vigo sitting there on that bathroom.
Oh, okay. Eastern Promises, I could see.
Yeah.
I could see, but.
But
even then, it's just, it's not as titillating.
It's not titillating. It's more
silly.
Like, oh my God, that poor guy. Like, he has no idea what's in store. You know, it's
the
just
closest.
Like,
the closest I could come was, well, no pun intended. The closest I can come for that is the, I think it was the first Sex in the City movie where Samantha's boy toy. Did you see that first one?
I've seen bits of it. I think I might even know the scene. I've seen the probably.
He turns around and he's like semi erect, and it looks like a Playgirl shoot when he turns around. As opposed to like, there you go.
I'm gonna go
as opposed to something like Forgetting Sarah Marshall, where he's like knocking things over with it in the living room, and you're just like, nobody wants to see that.
Yeah, I think, you know, probably a lot of women of a certain age would probably say American Gigolo, because that was done very casually. I just saw this for the first time, so don't include me in this club. but he's like, you know, he so casually like gets out of bed and just turns around, and it's like, whoa, I mean, that everything's there. And
it winks at you.
Hi. there is an equivalent for me, and it was called...
Oh, please don't say the piano. Harvey Keitel. My God.
I didn't see that part of the piano somehow. Like, I got bored and I wandered off, and then later my mom was like, man.
Oh, no, I saw the middle C right there.
No, like, I think my equivalent would be, it was a movie I caught at like 2 a.m. and
those are the best kind
of being a kid that's into medieval crap. It's the Circles in Berkeley, Your Highness. I was really like, I was 14, 15, somewhere in there. And I was really into, you know, medieval poetry and fantasy literature. And I saw this movie called Stealing Heaven. I'm going to have to double check the title on that. So
Is that the one with, who's in it?
It has the guy from Indiana Jones, Marcus Brody, and then two nobodies.
Wait a minute, are you talking about what his friend?
Yeah.
What's his name?
The Marcus, his friend, the guy that runs
the... What's his name?
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. Please don't tell me he saw his wanky.
No. He's just like a bit... He's like a background character of it.
Yeah, don't say bit part, because that... what are we saying here?
No, well, so it's a fictionalization of the medieval lovers, Heloise and Abelard. Famous medieval correspondent.
You're speaking total gibberish.
I know. Well, here's the... For dummies, they were... Abelard was like this really respected theologian in medieval... England.
You were how old when you were...
I was a teenager.
Wow. was your Twilight, is what you're saying.
Yes, this was my Twilight. And I'm screwing up the country all of a sudden, but it's because I'm very dehydrated at the moment. But
that's a problem for you.
It is. It's a constant problem. And he was tutoring this young woman named Heloise, and her uncle hired the guy. She was very smart, and for some reason, even though women were not generally given this great education, her uncle was like, well, she's very smart. It'd be like this nice thing if I hired this guy to give her an education. Well, he gave her an education in more ways than one.
He really gave it to her, right?
Yeah. And they...
Let me get on my yardstick.
The uncle found out, and of course, you know, this being medieval times, you know, a woman who not only were theologians supposed to remain chaste, I mean, they were living like monks. They were not supposed to get married. They were not supposed to sleep with women. Nothing. And
no, he didn't sleep.
Yeah. And so that he broke that rule, and the fact that he then slept with, you know, her and taken away her virginity and her marriage prospects, I mean, that was bad enough. And
yeah.
So, well, he said, well, no, I will, you know, I'm sorry, I will leave the church and I will marry her. Well, the uncle apparently didn't believe him, or didn't think that was good enough or something, because he hired a bunch of thugs and to break in and castrate Abelard, which then ended their relationship.
That's got to close the barn door after the first gets out.
That ended that. And so she went into a nunnery, he went into a monastery, and then they wrote this famous correspondence back and forth, you know, these great love letters that are debated as to be real or not, but, you know. Mm. So, yeah, it's this great, it's the Twilight for the medievalist, you know, kind of thing. And it's this great, you know, mystery.
And that's what this movie was based on?
That's what this movie was based on. And it's, of course, total, like, Cinemax version. And I'm seeing, like, so I'm like, oh, neat, a movie based on Eloise and Abelard. Yeah, I've never heard, this must be, you know, like, a good movie, right?
Shot for $30,000 on beta.
Yeah. So I'm watching it, and the production values are not that bad. And Yeah, and then it's getting cornier, you know, like they hire him like a prostitute. I mean, she's like totally, you know, naked, gets in bed with him, his friends trying to tempt him, and he resists the temptation, and it's like, oh, they're taking this quite seriously. And then, yeah, the first love scene between him and her happens, and he pulls off his monk's robe, and it was like, holy shit.
Really?
Like, yeah, I mean, we're talking fully, you know.
Fully erect?
Yeah.
No shit.
Yeah.
Was this like an Italian movie or something like that?
No, it was like an English. It was. I don't know who did it. I mean, all the actors were English, and yet it had poor Marcus Brody. It was apparently his last movie.
Poor Denholm Elliott. Yes. Wasn't it Denholm Elliott? Elliott. Fortunately, we don't get to see his Wee Willie.
No. And so, yeah, that was. I would have to say that was the equivalent for me of you seeing boobs for the first time. It was like,
wow.
Like, even though I'd seen, you know, various naked, you know, men on camera before, it was like. And I remember, like,
looks
I was
a
watching.
Different one.
Yeah, and it was a little much, and it was one of those things, like, I had taped it, like, late nights, like, oh, neat.
You're sneaking downstairs, rewind.
Yeah. Rewind. Yeah, it was sort of like, oh, my God, if Mom and Dad knew I was watching this, and then it was like, I you know, really embarrassing. I remember, like, turning it off at that point, like, going to bed, and then seeing it, it came on a few nights later, and I was like, I might give this another look.
Let me give this another shot.
Yeah,
just
this
in
is
case.
Before the internet, so.
Wow. Well, thank you for sharing.
This is a really long song.
Where did we? Okay, we were talking about Arthur, weren't we? The fact that you went and you saw the original when you were like three or something. No, you saw Lethal Weapon.
Which then,
you saw
yeah,
when you were a kid.
And then somehow, yeah, my childhood became repressed, and I didn't see. I had to wait till Stealing Heaven.
Yeah, that it all exploded. Well, that's another story. That's another kind of movie.
Yeah.
did you like the original Arthur? Were you a fan?
You know, I remember really having sort of a crush on a Dudley Moore as a kid.
You are the weirdest woman I've ever met.
Well, my first, and this is the thing that I don't quite remember, and why my memories of Arthur are skewed, is that Dudley Moore, he was in that Santa Claus movie as an elf. And I remember,
yeah.
Like, wanting...
Santa Claus. It was called Santa Claus.
Okay.
Yeah.
I wasn't...
It was by the makers of Superman. Santa Claus. This is not lying. That's how they build it.
And I remember, like, really... Because I was really transfixed by that movie for some inexplicable reason. And I remember wanting... It's not like I had a crush on Dudley Moore, but I really wanted to be, like, his elf friend.
It's a good thing you never met him, because he would be arrested. I just want she's just my elf friend. No, really, officer.
She's just my elf friend.
She's just my little elf friend. I'm going to give her a little haircut.
Yeah, I'm really, you know, people are going to like see like old. I'm going to stop reading me after this.
No, they're going to read more of you. That's
tell us more about your crush on Dudley Moore.
Dudley Moore.
So like. Well, I don't know, like, for some reason, I remember a lot of, like, Dudley Moore, and, because we also, around that same time, we went to the Hollywood Wax Museum, and they had Arthur, the wax figure of Arthur in the bathtub with the top hat on.
With the top hat,
and I remember
yeah, okay.
Knowing who that, what it was from, but I don't, it was like, oh, that's from Arthur, ha ha, and, but I don't
I don't remember
seeing the movie, like, I don't remember how I made that connection, but I must have seen the movie to know he was Arthur in the bathtub, so.
Well, but it was huge, it was a huge movie in 81. Well, I don't know.
Yeah, well, I was born
obviously
in 82.
You weren't, okay, so I'm dating myself, apparently. That's right, you were three when you saw Lethal Weapon. You didn't go back in time. No, but it was a big... That's an iconic image.
It is, but I was like seven, so...
Well, Arthur 2 came out in 88, so maybe it was...
Maybe,
but
I do remember seeing it and probably liking it, but probably not understanding half of it. I mean, that would be my guess.
The original Arthur's on Netflix, both that and the sequel, which I do not recommend watching the sequel because it sucks ass. But the first movie, I actually had somebody, I did a radio interview earlier this week about it, and somebody asked, and one of the hosts basically boiled it down to saying, oh, it's so sweet, he loved Liza Minnelli, the only reason he did, because he was drunk all the time. And I'm like, that's what you took away? that he could only love her when he's completely just shit-faced? It was a very 80s movie, the original was, so it just sort of exists in its own time, and it's kind of odd to watch now, because it doesn't really make a whole lot of sense. I mean, it's there, and this remake is, it hits all the same points. It actually is a very faithful remake to it, It's just it has Russell Brand instead of Dudley Moore. So it really relies on if you like Russell Brand. If you like him seeing, oh, what's going on here? Let me see a winky. What's going on? Oh, hey, you know, he sounds.
That's per vodka, that is.
That's just wrong. I'm going to talk like this all the time. Yeah, but it's.
I'll see if I don't know if I can turn on my Helen Mirren voice. I had one once.
Oh, yeah. Well, she's great in the movie. And just like in the original, John Gielgud stole the show. And she kind of steals the show in this one. I think everyone's expecting that. It's pound for pound kind of the same movie. Jennifer Gardner's character has a bigger part in it. I personally didn't quite feel it. I wasn't quite there with it, but I recognize that if you like, no pun intended, this brand of humor in terms of his delivery, yeah, you'll probably enjoy it. You'll think it's funny. The only bit is that in 81, alcoholism was hilarious.
Hilarious. We were all on cocaine and it was hilarious. Yes.
It's hilarious. But
how old-fashioned, you're drunk.
It's so charming. Oh my God, you shat on yourself.
I haven't slept for 3 days.
But now, alcoholism, there's a lot more sensitivity to alcoholism now. And Russell Brand himself is a recovered alcoholic.
Yeah.
So they kind of play up the AA angle on this a little bit more than they ever even approached in 1981. But my biggest complaint, and Greta Gerwig's very charming in it too. She's very lovable in it. It's good. It's basically the same movie. The only thing is that I would say that I'm bothered by the fact that they're just like, oh, isn't he sweet? Well, because he did this for her. I'm like, well, he's got tons of money. It'd be sweet if he did that and had no money. You know what I mean? How hard is it to be charming and fun
when you're
if you
wealthy.
Can just sit there and, yeah, I mean, sort of like watching The Bachelor, where you're like, oh, isn't it romantic? I'm like, what do you mean ABC's paying for this whole damn thing?
Yeah.
And this guy's a 35-year-old, super wealthy, good-looking bachelor. There's something wrong with him if he can't land a woman at that age. So.
Yeah, that's yeah. And women, we know it while watching that show. Like, what's wrong with him, you think?
Yeah,
what's wrong with him? I mean, there's got to be something, right? Like, you know.
Yeah, and they usually are, because you know what they're like batting like I don't know, half a hundred, like batting like 50.
Yeah,
that
I mean,
show.
They're like the guys that secretly want to wear like diapers and you know have you make bottles for them or something.
And
like,
what's wrong with that?
Yeah.
You say that like it's wrong.
I don't care about preparing bottles. Diapers, I'm going to draw the line there.
You'd be like, yeah, no, sorry.
I'm sorry. I don't care if you're Gerard Butler. I'm not, you know, we're not playing that game.
So if Gerard Butler walked into your house and be like, he's a diaper, he's like, this is it. This is your chance. Diaper or not. You're going to send him packing?
I think so.
Tell us the truth.
It's different if it was like... I mean,
what if it was just a wet diaper?
No.
These are the questions
I have to be able to sleep at night. And I don't want like salted slug stomach thinking I traded like my dignity for one night with Bradley Cooper, you know, where we played some weird fetish game. And I'm never like that. That also means I never can watch those people's movies again. It's like, wow, like I can never watch 300 again because now I know Gerard Butler's like an overgrown baby.
he's like, ah, you know,
he's
like, Sparta. Oh, I need to change, Bobby. Where?
Yeah, it's different if he shows
Did
up
I
and he's
just
like,
go there.
Yeah, I think it's different if he shows up and he's like, oh, you know, I've never gotten over my 300 thing. I have to be King Leonidas all the time in our private life. Like, that's okay. Like, I could get behind that.
That's okay. He's sitting there going, woman, bring me my beer.
Yeah, that's the mental illness.
The Spurs game is on. I need to watch.
You know, we're going to, like, yeah, kick salesmen down the steps or something. I'm okay with that.
Somebody comes up, you put mushrooms on the pizza, kick, and just knock them into the...
Yeah,
you have this giant well in the front. Don't fall in there, because it's the pit of eternal pain.
Yeah, it's like we have to spend a bunch of money covering up these things. That at least I could live with, but, you know.
Yeah, even a wet diaper, not just wet, right?
No. That crosses the line of creepy.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm glad we know where that line is.
Yeah, now you know. It's not the other person who started out wanting to be Dudley Moore's elf friend. You know, it was like, I draw the line at human large man babies.
I am terrified right now.
You're terrified. These are things I didn't know about myself.
You're like, wait a minute, I'm surprising myself.
Yeah.
I didn't know I drew the line at diapers. I thought I was totally cool with that.
I did. I was like, gosh, I have standards.
When I woke up this morning, I never thought I'd say diapers and draw the line. Anyways, my final fat guy's grade for Arthur is kind of rocks because it's charming and cute and works for what it is. Let's move on to, I just got a little bit of shout out to Born to Be Wild, the family movie, after all that.
Oh, man.
There's less poop in that movie than in this conversation that we've just had. It's a cute sort of 40-minute IMAX movie, and it's funny, it's actually a return of IMAX movies because so many movies are like Sucker Punch is presented in the IMAX, and you know, he had How to Train Your Dragon, and you had even more recently you had like Tron and those kind of things. You have
Arthur
full length movies.
IMAX.
Arthur 3, Gerard and Diapers, in IMAX 3. It's a cute movie. It's a story of people who rescue orangutans and elephants into obviously two different countries because you know there aren't any elephants in Borneo. But it's a 40-minute movie. I took my kids. It's in 3D. It's very cute, and it's one of those get in and get out movies. Since it's short, because it is made for IMAX, it's something you can take kids to, and we did enjoy it as a family.
I'm actually really excited about this one because. And to bring it on a serious note, no.
Let's rein it in, people.
Let's rein it in. And you know, actually, one of my favorite charities to support is Orangutan Outreach. And,
oh, really?
Yeah, and somebody's gonna see this as like this horrible plug, but for my birthday, listeners may know this and they may have participated, but for my birthday, I asked people instead of buying like a present, would you donate money to Orangutan Outreach? And okay. I raised like a lot. I was really amazed because like so many people, you know, forked over money, and we got I don't remember if it ended at $500 or almost got to $500, but
wow. Is it the organization that they spotlight in the movie?
I think it might be, or it's like a cousin organization, but they have
because Borneo's not that big. I mean, there can't be that many.
No, I believe it is. I should double check this. I know that Orangutan Outreach is supporting the movie. I believe it is them. Because I know they were tweeting about it several months ago, and I'm sure they're going to start doing it again. But so it's cool because they do really good work, and they're really trying to get public awareness about the palm oil issue and deforestation, and about these little guys getting orphaned, and I mean they're trying very radical experiments there to try and reintegrate these little guys back into the wild and living having them live in groups and things that they're not socially like. Nature never intended them to all live together like that, so it's been like it's a cool experiment. I'm glad that it's being part of this movie because they actually had a cute little series on Animal Planet, and it got canceled because Animal Planet decided they wanted to shift their programming a little bit, and so it's kind of cool that it's going to get this really big platform to showcase them, and also the baby elephants. I'm not going to sneer. Hey, baby elephants, you don't deserve anything.
Screw the baby elephants. Support my orangutans.
I've heard of that organization before, and they're equally cool. So that yeah. I'm really excited to see the movie because of
It's very cute, and I mean it is neat. It's really neat to see how these people how the people who take care of the animals on both continents, because it's interesting to see the keepers of the elephants and how they live with them and how they interact with the elephants. And it's also neat to see the same thing with the orangutans, only it's very, very different. And of course, obviously orangutans are much closer to humans, so there's a little bit more of that identification with them.
But it
is neat to see how it's presented, and it is presented in a very G-rated sense, so it's not like it doesn't really delve much into issues as much as just presenting. Well, this is what they do, and this is how they do it.
Yeah.
So it's a neat thing, but yeah, it's going to be opened in IMAX theaters, which is relatively rare. You usually get the big platform movies, the 2-hour full length features. So
I think it's kind of cool because audiences have shown like such an appetite for like the really good nature documentaries like March of the Penguins or. What was the one about the walrus and the seal? It was like
there's Arctic Tail.
Yeah.
Which was, and then of course Disney does the Disney Nature ones, which is Earth and then Oceans. They got African Cats.
Yeah.
Coming up at the end of the month.
And it's like people really respond to that. And I think that's actually kind of cool. The idea of people going to movies that aren't necessarily like, you know, Hop or whatever with their kids. It's like something different. You don't have to go all the way to like a museum to see a cute little nature program. So,
well, and I brought my I brought my 3-year-old. Well, he's almost three. He's about a month from being three, and of course I brought my 7-year-old and my 9-year-old to the movie as well. But it was neat because I brought my 3-year-old. And he got a little antsy because he's three, but still, it's got cute animals. It's 40 minutes long. He thinks it's cool to have the glasses on if the kid can keep the, if he's old enough to put the 3D glasses on. It's really cute. It's neat for families. So yeah.
How does the 3D on it work? Like, did like monkeys reach out and at you or something? I was talking about,
well, I mean, they just that.
Like they're drunk.
Well, no. I mean, it's just in 3D. So of course you got the monkey swinging around, and it's an immersive IMAX thing.
Like you're at the zoo. Like that's supposed to be like you're at a zoo. Okay.
Well, but even though there's a scene where they got this gibbon swinging around on the vines, and it like boom, almost comes into the camera. So okay. They have a couple, but it's not like staged necessarily.
No. I didn't think like reach out and touch the audience. You know, I wondered if it was just a lot of shots of like the monkey like reaching for whatever was behind the
orangutan has a paddle ball and it's going boing 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 right in your face. No, it's not
the elephant like walks to the camera and you know, yeah. That's what I was curious about, because it was like in 3D. It's like, you know, you can't really control animals too. So like, how is that going to be? Yeah, 3D exactly when you don't have, you know. So that's interesting. I was really curious about that. I don't know why, but
very very cute. So definitely, I'm going to say that one's a rocks. Let's move on to box office from last weekend. Hop came in, swooped in, and took it away from Source Code. Well, I mean, it made more than twice as much as Source Code did over the weekend. But Hop won with almost $38 million. And Source Code came in second, but it was a lot less. It was, it was like $15, $16 million. Just under $15 million. Insidious, that's a neat one, because that one kind of, that cost like $1 million to make. And it's already made $13 million from last weekend. And then down the line, those three were the top spots, and Diary of a Wimpy Kid came in next. What's neat, I pointed this out, of all the movies, for all the people out there that are saying, Hollywood's just about remakes, sequels, reboots, that kind of thing, there is only one movie in the top 10 from last weekend that is a sequel of or a sequel, remake, or anything, and that's Diary of a Wimpy Kid.
Yeah, and I think it's, you know, because isn't number 5, was Limitless still holding it?
Yeah, Limitless was just under it. It was like 9.5.
I think it's, I mean, I've been talking about this a lot with people, because we've gotten so, because that's the other big complaint besides the sequels, remakes, reboots, and a very valid complaint that we don't see a lot of just kind of smart stuff like we used to see in the 80s and 90s, just kind of nice little mature thrillers that didn't cost a ton to make, that had like a nifty little story.
We've got a lot of those.
And this month was like a really good month for that kind of stuff. And I hope the fact that like Lincoln Lawyer and Limitless and Adjustment Bureau, and even Source Code and Insidious making, you know, good money kind of will start bringing some of that back. That's like people will go see a fun little movie like Limitless that's, it's not dumb, you know, but it's just kind of a nice thriller, like a nice, you know, thriller like you might have gotten with like Harrison Ford or something once. You know?
Oh yeah, yeah. It's been a surprisingly strong spring. So
yeah,
I mean, it may dip a little bit this weekend. Oh, who do you think is going to win the weekend this week?
The weekend probably, between. I'm kind of thinking it's probably going to be Your Highness or Arthur. I don't, because a lot of people really do seem to respond to Russell Brand. I mean, he hasn't really had his. Well, no, what I get him to the Greek. How did
that did okay? It did wasn't. Okay. It was not a. That wasn't a huge hit. That was. But Universal has been struggling.
Yeah.
A lot.
I mean, it feels like the Arthur thing has been really. It's been really heavily advertised, so I could see a lot of people kind of flocking to it. And, but it's sort of like a
harmless movie. It's there and it's sweet. I think when I went to the screening was freaking packed, and they were turning people away, which is fun when you're a press member. You walk up, you're like, I'm press, and like, what? And everyone's like, hey, what are you doing in there? I'm like, suckas. No.
Yeah, and it kind of makes me, Your Highness screening wasn't full, surprisingly, which is rare for the Denver screenings. And not a lot of people were laughing, and not a lot of people were all that excited. And I heard a lot of kind of walking out, not a lot of enthusiasm. I mean, the trailer, I think the TV spots have been very catchy, and it may actually, if it's probably between Arthur and Your Highness. I don't see Hannah really trumping it.
I don't think Hannah's going to, I just don't think American audiences are going to really go for Hannah. Yeah. I mean, it is hard to say, well, it's about assassin, but really why is she an assassin, and how does, it's really hard to blurb. So you say, what's Hannah about? And people are like, well, it's about this girl who just fucking kills people.
Yeah, and it's definitely, it's got weird TV spots. I mean, because she has like the bow and arrow and the like Russian fur hats. I think it, you know, if it had more of like that slick alias thing, I think maybe it would. And that's the only thing I can think of. And people are like, I don't get what that's about. It's like, so if it was like, maybe slicker, more like Alias, it might. Well, you know,
the other thing with Hannah is to actually say what it's really about, it spoils the ending. You know, so it's sort of like, it's really, you're watching the movie and it's kind of hard to say, well, she's this and this is happening, but we really don't know why.
Yeah.
And that will be revealed eventually, but otherwise, you just don't know.
It's
she's
got such sort
people.
Of a low rent, at least the TV spots I've heard, like, because they did that, like, really, you know, 90s voiceover. You know, she's pursued by, you know, nameless figures. It's like, every time I see those, and, like, the movie never, like, ends up not doing well, and I think people kind of react against that. Like, if you're having to explain it to me.
Yeah. See, I think Arthur will win. I think it's going to be Russell Brand's weekend, because I think Arthur's going to win. With a nice hefty $30 million-ish. And then Hop's going to come in second because we're still near Easter, and that did just alarmingly well last week. And Your Highness, I don't think Your Highness is going to do well. R-rated comedies are real hit or miss when they're going to strike at the box office, and stoner comedies usually don't make a whole lot of money.
Yeah. And I also think, other than maybe James Franco, Natalie Portman, I'm not sure, like, you know, the majority of American audiences are going to really go for, and it's very clearly, even in the TV spots, Danny McBride's movie, and they're not hiding that. They're not pretending like James Franco's in it more or anything.
Well, but the other thing is, neither of them are actually big movie. I mean, they've been nominated, one's won, one nominated this year in the news and everything, but neither of them are really, they're not exactly names you can slap on a movie and make 25,
I think, like,
million.
Natalie Portman might actually have some the most buzz going into it because of the Oscar, and now she's got all that controversy about, you know, Black Swan. So, I mean, I think there's almost like that, well, Natalie Portman's in it, like, kind of thing that people might draw people in. But she's also, like, I constantly hear people like, oh, she never makes movies I like, so, you know. That could ding it, you know. And yes, it's a James Franco backlash. Actually, people are still angry at him from the.
Let's put it this way: if Your Highness bombs, it's not James Franco's fault.
Yeah, I know. I know somebody will. I bet you anything, somebody will write that article though.
Oh, it'll be out there. That's for me, I'm sure.
Like Sunday night, there's going to be: is James Franco really the star? You know, has his star fallen so soon?
Yeah, yeah. Exactly.
What happened to his post-Oscar heyday? You know?
Yeah,
I mean, it was a nomination. You don't usually get like a ton of, you know. Yeah, but I there will be like five articles saying that at least one of them
is James Franco dead. Is his career over?
Yeah,
get back on General Hospital, Knave.
Is James Franco due for a comeback? That'll be like a week the next week.
That's right. It'll be kill James, kill Bill, kill James. Anyways, that was an awful joke. I don't know where I was going with that.
That's okay.
Let's do the Fat Guy Five.
Okay.
This was actually your idea, which
yay,
I was. I'm happy that you can. Mine was like.
Yours was good five. Though. Like I had like a ton of them for yours, and I was like, I came up with, I was like, this one's stupid, but maybe like, you know,
stupid is what this show is about.
I was like, maybe we each have to come up with one, and he wants me to come up with my own, so I'll come up with a stupid one. So his looks even better.
What with the five ass kicking kids? Or the five. Five fun alcoholics.
Yeah, and I had a lot of fun alcoholics.
I couldn't think. I'm like, okay, Arthur, and like Laverne and Shirley got drunk in an episode of TV.
And, like my favorite would be Gangi from Arrested Development.
You see, we could do it without dipping into television. That's the biggest.
I know,
problem.
Like that was the thing. Like without Gangi, though, I had like you know Elwood P. Dowd from Oddly Another Bunny Movie. Harvey. He's like the funnest alcoholic because he's not angry.
Oh, from the 40s? Alcoholics are great in the 40s.
They're kind of like modern stoners when you think about it, because they're never angry. They're always like super laid back.
Like no one's an angry drunk. Like no one
unless
in the 40s.
Unless they're Irish. Like then it's kind of like amusingly, like they'll knock something over.
Yeah. Oh, and they'd have they'd always be sweaty and bald, and they'd have the wife beater T-shirt. And they'd like knock over a lamp.
A giant nose, like
giant nose.
Yeah, because alcohol swells your nose.
Was it a W.C. Fields? Whoa, yeah. What pineapple juice in my pineapple juice? anyways, the Fat Guy 5 list for this one has nothing to do with alcoholics, at least not on the surface. It's 5 awesome fantasy film hairdos.
Yeah.
And this is in honor of everybody from Pineapple Express medieval times.
Because they all do have awesome hair, and apparently Danny, I don't know which interview revealed this, but his hair is based on Mel Gibson in Lethal Weapon.
Everyone should.
It's a great hairstyle, and I will argue to the death that it is not a mullet. So
it's not a mullet.
It's not. See, oh my God, you agree with me. You're my
best totally
friend.
Agree. The party is everywhere. It's not just a party in the back.
Yeah, it's you know, a mullet has to be really short on top. Like it has to be really groomed on top, and it has to be that MacGyver thing to be
Billy Ray Cyrus.
Yeah, the Billy Ray Cyrus. That's like what Mel Gibson had was a shag. It was Yeah.
Sort of like the Rachel before it like calmed down.
It is. It totally is. It's like people need to respect that and quit calling it a mullet. Like it was kind of mullety. I mean, at the closest, it was in the very first Lethal Weapon. I've studied this. I could write like a doctoral thesis.
You have like documented distance.
Yeah, it was
from
a little more structured in that film. So it kind of got into that like, pop 80s mullet, like a lot of pop stars wearing, but still wasn't a true mullet. Like, not.
What he was wearing was what AC/DC would have in the 80s. Yeah, not mullet. Mullet was more country western. There's a huge difference. I'm with you on that one.
Yeah, see, and I constantly, and my sister, who is a hairstylist, agrees with me, so we have, like, weight to back it up. She's like,
she's an expert. She can be certified by the court.
She's been certified by the state. She's like, that's not a mullet. That's a shag. So I know what a mullet is, and I know what a shag haircut is, and that's, So, and I tell people that, and they're like, no, she's wrong. It's a mullet. And it's like, my sister cuts hair.
When people come in
and say, I want a mullet, she knows how to do it.
They don't come walking out looking like Mel Gibson.
And they were like, I wanted to look like Mel Gibson. She's like, you should have specified a shag.
What if they come and say they want to look like Dudley Moore? I want to look like Dudley Moore's elfish friend.
Then she's got their hair like a goalless because she'd be confused.
Legolas has closer to a mullet, yes.
Yeah, see, there's a perfect example because it's way too flat on top and it's very flowy on the bottom.
Yeah, it's sort of an elfy mullet.
But, and actually, for another Lord of the Rings cast member, Viggo had like a heck of a mullet in The Prophecy. Like, that is the classic mullet. That is a great mullet. And of course, the devil would have one.
you're like just completely, you're like digging Amy to like in Viggo. We can chart any hairstyle through Viggo.
Actually, I think he pretty much had his like Aragorn hair from like time immemorial, but he had for that. I don't know why he had the mullet for The Prophecy. I think that was a creative decision on the part of the filmmakers. I don't know. One day I'll interview Viggo and I'll ask him. I'll be like, so as a final question,
let's talk mullets. The world wants to know.
It's
like, I've never had a mullet.
Mic.
I've had a shag.
I had accidentally had a mullet once.
How do you accidentally have a mullet? What are you like fixing your?
No, my
changing your oil and somebody turns the car on.
No, she was a really mean hairstylist, and I kind of showed up like a few minutes late, and I was like, I'm so sorry, and this was before like cell phones. Everybody had a cell phone; you could call ahead. Yeah. And she was like, whatever. And I sat down, I got up, and she cut my hair into a mullet, like to get revenge on me.
Wow.
Yeah.
You could like sue over that.
I know, and I should have.
Totally should have.
It was crazy.
Be known as the mullet lawsuit. It would have been like the McDonald's coffee.
And it was one of those things, like she kind of styled it to kind of cover it up, but like when I got home and I, washed
and you wash
it out,
like,
it was
like,
and I'm trying to like fix it. I was like, I have a girl mullet, like, because girl mullets are slightly different. They're kind of like what, female hockey player would wear.
They are definitely female mullets.
So, and that she cut my hair into one. I had to wear a hat for a
For 3 years.
For like 3 years. It. Still wearing it, yeah.
All right, let's do this Fat Guy 5.
In fact, it looked a lot like one of the ones on the list, and I will point out which one it was.
Well, let's start with the first one. You picked a bunch of these, so I want you to
Did you write them down? Like,
yeah, first one is Willow.
Ah, yes, Willow. Willow's a, you know, the problem with Willow, it's like Viggo Mortensen, Val Kilmer's hair. It's beautiful. It's so beautiful. But it's, like, completely impractical for him, like a male warrior. He's, yeah. like, you know, he's supposed to be, like, this great swordsman. He can do, like, all these tricks and,
Somebody can grab him from 6 feet away.
Yeah, like, somebody can grab him, just, like, yank him out. Or it can, conversely, what I was thinking is it can fly into his eyes, and then he's blind, and somebody's, like, stab. It's like, very long hair. I can't even eat soup without it, like, getting in my face. So how does he fight with, like, swords? And how does he ride a horse? Like, without it being back in a ponytail or a
clip? And here's also here's the reality of something like that. Have you ever known a guy to have hair, or a woman to have hair like that, and not be, like, completely preoccupied with it?
Yeah. Get away from it. Like, no, flipping don't touch it. Me. And he kind of does in the movie. Like, he does a lot of a shampoo commercial flip, because there's a part where he, like, goes, oh no, and he, like, kind of really flips that back, like, he's like, wow. Like Val Kilmer, like, check this out. And it, you know, it's like, it's so,
and yeah. Well, and also Warwick Davis, he has quite a do in that movie.
You know, he's got a shag.
That was very popular back then.
Yeah, let's move on to the baby. Has that great red hair too, like, she's, like, so little, but she has, like, that little, and it, only as an adult did I realize they must have, like, glued it onto the blanket, because you only ever see that little tuft right up there.
Yeah, obviously. And then the most ironic thing about Willow, it's directed by Ron Howard, who's completely bald.
I know. Except for that's probably why everybody has such, like, long, incredible hair.
He's like, I want gorgeous hair in this movie.
and there's a red, I mean, the girl's, like, got red hair, and yeah. It's kind of long and, like, gets free if it's braid, you know.
Yeah. The next one is, you got the list there. This is a mix. It's Red Sonja, which was what you said. But I said, I want to lump all of the Conan movies.
Yeah, you're like, one. No, not just one. All.
Because everyone has redonkulous hair.
Yeah, it's true. Films. It's like, I think that, like, Conan, because I was, when I came up with this, I was like, must look up Conan, you know, Conan the Barbarian characters. Yeah. And, like,
not Conan O'Brien, who has his own cool hairstyle.
Yes, he does. He has the great hair. But, yeah, it's like, you know, Arnold's hair is so, like, you can tell they're holding it on with that.
With the helmet?
Yeah. It's got that old Western Apache thing. Like, they resist to tie the thing around. It's like, yeah.
Yeah. Well, but also Bridget Nielsen.
Yeah, and that's what my hair looks like.
There's your girl mullet. Yep. In redhead. You're both redheads,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, it looked just like that. Because I would try to, like, puff it up to try to hide the mullet.
You're like, let me get a loincloth and a sword.
It would have worked better. If I'd known what, like, hipsters were, or, like, irony was a little better, I would have just been like, I just rocked it. I would have got, like, the metal headband and just been like, yeah.
You would have looked awesome.
I would have looked awesome. Get some gauntlets. But also,
I also had to mention, because Grace Jones, we mentioned her earlier, she has that buzz, that flat top, you know, really just completely no way to do this hair in the time in which Conan the Destroyer was set.
Yeah, it's very, like, I mean, it is clean. You're talking about an era that doesn't have good razors, let alone electric razors, and that
or
thing is
soap.
Or soap, and it's very sharp, you know?
Yeah, I don't know how she got her hair to be. Maybe the wizard cut it or
it's
something.
It's a weapon, like, all on its own. Yeah. She could have, like, slashed, you know, Conan's throat with her hair.
She could have.
Because it's got a good edge.
She, yeah, it's, yeah, it's, and then, yeah, it's just Grace Jones. Any hair with Grace Jones. And speaking of hair, I mean, she was wearing such little clothes, you almost got to see it in other places of her body in that outfit she was wearing. So, yes.
Wow.
I went there.
I'm looking for all our similar pictures of, but I don't know, it's mostly just Conan. Like, he has Conan. He has the most remarkable hair.
It's bizarre. Then there's also the next one on the list. This is one for me. I insisted this is on there. It's Nicolas Cage.
I was going to say James Earl Jones. Like,
Oh, yes. Oh, my gosh. Talking about...
I knew I was forgetting one. And I yes, he finally popped up.
Glorious hair. And you're like, he's like Mufasa. Yeah. He's Mufasa with Crystal Gale hair. I don't know what's going on with that.
His bangs are just, like, incredibly even. It's so smooth.
Yeah. I just watched it this weekend, and it's uncanny.
It's incredible.
It's disturbing.
I kind of would like. I mean, there are hipsters that would crave that hair, like the Betty Page.
Uh huh.
Yeah. Now you may go.
I'm now thinking of James Earl Jones in a Betty Page pose, and it's disturbing me. Let's move on to something less disturbing, which is. Nicolas Cage in Season of the Witch, which came out this year. I actually paid to go see this because I said this
really
has to be.
I really wanted to see it. Like I wanted a friend like you to go see it with. You can't tell people like people don't understand. Like I want to go see it because it's gonna suck, and they're like people are like why?
You know what it's like? It's like I described this. I did a review recently for Sharktopus. I said it's the equivalent of running out to the Stop and Rob in the middle of the night and getting junk food and eating it while you're working late. It's awful. It's not good. It's not good for you. But there's something
so delicious.
Just sort of like, just something awesome about it. And it's Nicolas Cage with his mullet.
It's you know that, you know, your life is short and you've there's like a glee in choosing to do something so bad with your time.
I know, I went to go see it and like paid $5 to see it. It wasn't that much. And it was like, it was in this theater that had 30 screens and it was in like number 30.
They're like, we're ashamed that we're even playing this.
Wait, and I was so upset because somebody else came in and watched the movie and I'm like, damn it. I wanted this place all to myself.
And it's his hair is, and I imagine it's because he doesn't have a lot of hair. It's so stiff. Like, it's like they kind of just sort of stuck it onto his head and like, that'll do.
They're like, whatever. He does, it's just, it's that we got, and you know what it is? It's a shag. I think that Mel Gibson donated his shag to Planet Hollywood and they just used that and glued it on the back
of
his head.
They've cloned it. It's taken on a life of its own. It's sentient.
That's right. It will come and haunt you. It will attack you. Let's go to the next one. Next one on the list.
Is it? I'm so stupid.
Labyrinth.
Labyrinth. Yes. I was like thinking it's. I couldn't tell if it was one of our other L movies.
Oh. We have another one coming up.
Yeah,
that's great.
I was like, it's which one? I'm mixing it up. I mean, David Bowie's hair in that is just. You know when here's more of my gender confusion. I don't think I saw this movie as a kid. I'm told I did and I don't remember. But when I saw the poster for it, it used to be up at my video store for like a really long time. Somebody there was probably like a Bowie fan. I thought it was a woman.
Well, yeah.
I thought it was like an evil, sexy witch.
An evil, sexy witch.
Because
it's
only his face, and he's holding the ball, and I was like, "That's a scary looking witch."
And in your defense, he's got that very angular face, and he was wearing makeup for crying
out
loud.
And as a kid, you're like, "Boys don't wear makeup."
Yeah, and his codpiece was nowhere near that picture.
Yeah,
so
like if I had seen that, I'd be like, "That's a boy." That's a weird boy.
He's got incredible hair in that movie, and it's so short now. But I mean, yeah, that was his post Ziggy Stardust phase where he had toned it down.
Yeah, that was relaxed for Bowie.
Yeah,
and it's sort of weird. Like if you really study that film and having it on DVD, I cannot figure out how they did it because it's almost like it's got this like blue goo at the roots. So it's strange, and it's like
I don't think there's a shred of real human hair.
I don't know.
It's probably like musk ox that's been that's been dyed and put into a wig.
I've never really understood it. Even now, I look back, and I mean, being a fantasy junkie, it's like, why did we think that was the right look? You know, so many of them did that, like sparkles and. You know, big things. It's even in Willow, like the fairy queen has like, you know, really 80s hair and makeup, and it's like, why didn't we try harder to make their own worlds, make it look like its own thing instead of, oh my god, that looks like what a rock star wears in the 80s, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know. Labyrinth just completely is the best example of that.
Yes.
It's like why would a goblin king look like that. Like, it makes no sense.
He looks nothing like a goblin.
Yeah. It's like, so he's handsome, but why the hair?
Yeah, and he reminds you of the babe. It makes no sense. The power
of the voodoo. And it's so, I have to say, and there is, it's such a cultish thing. Like, if you look on YouTube or you type it into Google, like, there's so much, like, girls love that movie and they love him in that movie.
Oh, yeah.
It's, I look at it and it's like, there's nothing remotely sexy about it, but there was something about the way he played it that was like, it overcame the hair and the Spock eyebrows.
Spock eyebrows. Well, you know.
He did it very, David Bowie's a sexy guy. It overcame.
He transcended. He transcended his gender and sexuality during that movie. So let's, speaking of somebody who didn't transcend his gender and sexuality.
This one's all yours, I think.
Legend. This is Tom Cruise with his sort of, I guess you could say, sort of cross between Ted Theodore Logan / Mo Howard hairstyle for a fantasy film. It's sort of like it's like a Peter Pan, like a salad bowl, like it fit over his all the way down to his neck, and they just went around, and it's this most bizarre. It's sort of like, and then it kind of was brought into being with River Phoenix. That was like his haircut for a while.
Yeah, it was like, you know, all nubile boys. It's probably like a Peter Pan thing. I mean, I'm probably like said that, and then it's like actually what they were going for.
That,
like,
could be. It's the dirtiest, filthiest, weirdest look that Tom Cruise has ever had.
It is. It really is. And it's almost got like some feathering on the ends. I don't know. Yeah.
And was it Mia Sara was in it?
Yes.
And she looked great.
She did.
And Tim Curry looks freaking awesome as the devil.
I'm still not convinced that is Tim Curry, and it isn't just the devil.
It's a devil. His agent wouldn't allow.
They just called up the devil.
The devil's agents called up Tim Curry. He's like, look, you know what? We can't let him know we're doing this movie. Can we use your name instead? Yeah.
Yeah, it's a tricky thing when you're hiring out the Prince of Darkness. People don't want to go. You get protests. This is just supposed to be a fun fantasy movie.
And you got Tom Cruise. Yeah. That was before his Scientology days, I think.
Yeah, his English accent is sort of a thing of beauty in that too. Is it
as good as our honorable mention? Speaking of English accents, do the honorable mention so we can get
the honorable mention. Another film full of shag haircuts. That's right.
Everybody has it.
Yeah.
Except the blind guy has.
He has the Tom Cruise haircut.
We are talking, of course, about Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves.
Yeah. People that argue that Mel Gibson has a mullet thing. No, I never hear people go, Kevin Costner has a mullet in Robin Hood. And it's the same haircut.
It's the exact same haircut.
It's exactly the same.
Which is the exact same haircut he had in Dances with Wolves.
Exactly. Pretty much, I was like the Kevin Costner hair. I mean, it's like all the guys were kind of wearing it. It's kind of the Kurt Russell thing, too. I mean, I don't know. But it was the Kevin Costner style.
Sort of like the Kurt Russell hair from The Thing.
Yeah, the whole cast does have it. Like they wanted, like Kevin Costner was like, I ain't cutting my hair. And so like they had to make the rest of the cast fit because, like, I don't know that Christian Slater's hair grows any other way because he kind of has that widow's peak. He's got the Kevin Costner shag going.
Even like Christian Slater's younger brother in that movie has the hair going on, and Alan Rickman
and Alan Rickman's got like a really like an evil version, but it's still the same.
It's dark.
A special mention has to go to Michael Wincott, who played so many raspy 80s 90s bad guys, more 90s I guess. And he's like the only one that's like, this is a medieval picture, and he's got like those long greasy like just hangs.
He's got the Tom Cruise haircut.
Yeah, except it's like shoulder long.
Yeah, you know what? I think you have there's the shag, mm-hmm. or the long flowing Thulsa Doom hair from Conan, or you've got the shaggy salad bowl cut.
Yeah, and then there's the guys like Mike Wincott that said, did you know they didn't have shampoo? Then, and like, he just pulls the top back, and it's like greasy and slimy, and and he's just kind of got it hanging in his eyes.
He's like, how else am I going to lubricate my boots?
Yeah, it's like, he's the only one that's like, I realized, I was the one that realized it was medieval, right? Yeah, you know, Kevin Costner's kind of got a round brow. She's kind of fluffing up.
Yeah, way too much time spending on their hair. No, this is how we looked back then.
Shut up, Michael. This is history. Watch exactly. As history and legend is made.
I think we gotta go.
I do have to point out, you gotta pay attention to Little John's like epic. He's got like a helmet.
He's got no hair on the top of his head, correct?
No, he does. Like, he has a helmet, it's like a football helmet made of brown hair on his head, and then he has a really fake beard that I didn't know was fake until I saw the anniversary edition, DVD, and you can, really see that it's glued on. It's like, oh, my God, could the guy, not grow a beard?
Flaking off at one point.
It's like that real, the beards that they used to wear, in those 60s history movies, and you could always really tell that they were fake, and they're using one in Robin Hood. It's
made of felt.
Yeah. It's like, we used up the budget on,
on Kevin Costner's styling products.
Yeah. It just reuses, the Peter O'Toole beard on you. Yeah, hair is I don't think that guy's hair moves for the whole movie. And even when Sherwood Forest is on fire, it still holds.
You would think that they'd be terrified that their heads would explode Michael Jackson in a Pepsi commercial.
All that hairspray, all that mousse,
Wow. Oh, wow. We are going to go to a break, and when we get back, we're going to do DVDs. And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies. Elizabeth, I have to give you kudos. That was, I think, the longest middle segment we've ever had.
I'm so ashamed. It's
Why ashamed? That's awesome.
I think I'll come off as needy. This is the only.
I need to talk about Willow more.
Yeah. Let me tell you about what I think about Mad Mardigan's hair. And also what I thought about Labyrinth when I was 6. Therapy session. I'm on a chair.
Don't you feel good now? We got all that out of our system.
I talked about my sexual awakening.
Yeah. So if you're listening to this on the radio and you want to hear some crazy, crazy stuff about me and Elizabeth.
Yeah, there's so much.
There's just stuff. You can go back and check it out or not. It's up to you.
This is terrible. This is going to be the intro to the radio.
This is coming back, because the intro, we're going to have finished talking real quickly about Your Highness, and then the radio, and we're back on the radio in Wyoming, and they're going to not know anything that happened in the middle, and it's going to be like coming in at the end of Dallas after skipping 6 seasons and be like, what is happening? Bobby Ewing's still alive? What? So
I had a terrible dream, Kevin.
See?
I dreamed we talked a lot about fantasy hair.
It's crazy. But now that we've done the reviews, what's coming up next here?
It is the world famous DVD review roundup.
See, that's good. That worked out good. See, I always have to prep the guest just to get that awesome sound effect. One of these days I'm going to bring in like a thunderclap.
And then your poor guest will be I'm sitting in a puddle.
Yeah, what happened? And then the fans will revolt and be like, "What? We want the Lucasfilm whip sound." But yeah, DVDs this week, a lot of them actually Blu-rays more than anything else. Tron, the original Tron, is on Blu-ray for the first time ever. So if you were one of those people who paid $125 for the DVD of Tron back in November, suckers, you can get the Blu-ray now for $15.
That purchase isn't going to appreciate them.
That DVD of Tron from 2002 is not going to be worth anything now. Because what it comes with?
What does it come with?
A DVD of Tron. it's a Blu-ray and a DVD combo pack. There's also Tron Legacy, which I love for what it was, because it's a visually crazy movie. I love these movies. I was 11 when Tron came out, so it was a big deal to me. So the new one's out. Also Casino Jack with Kevin Spacey doing a lot of bad celebrity impressions. It's an okay movie. It's award bait. It's trying to win an awards. It's about political corruption in building casinos. And it's okay. And then there's Fiddler on the Roof and Babe. Both of those are getting Blu-ray releases. They're almost the exact same movie. No, I'm not. Nothing to do with each other.
I can't even connect. Like, oh, Casino Jack. Yeah, no, that doesn't work. reaching even for me.
Fiddler on the Roof and Babe both take place on farms, and that's about a similar.
Yeah, and one is about the pogroms, and one is about the slaughter of pigs.
I don't know if you blurb those exactly properly. One's a cute kids movie, the other one's an award-winning musical. Let's leave it at that.
Well, they did get driven off of their farm.
That's true. Yeah, they are. They are wishing they were a wealthy man, and Babe was wishing he was a wealthy man too. So his mom gets like slaughtered in the beginning of the movie. You're just like, what? This is the most depressing kids movie ever.
That was a really traumatizing movie. I was older when I saw that, and it was still traumatizing.
It wasn't as traumatizing as Lethal Weapon when you were 3 years old.
No, it was like the I need to become a vegetarian, but it's took me another decade and a half to do it.
Are you a vegetarian?
I am a vegetarian. All of Wyoming just like tuned out.
They're delicious.
Hippie.
I could never be a vegetarian. I just like meat too much.
Yeah, it's well, and I was just reading this book called "The Pig That Sang at the Moon," all about like how, you know, the feelings of farm animals, and I was crying, thinking I'm never gonna regress. Like,
So what's your we got a short segment here. So what's your DVD pick? That has nothing to do with vegetarianism.
Well, because I didn't see Tron because I'm lame. Uh-huh. Nobody would go with me either. I was like, what is it, Tron Legacy in 3D? Nobody would go.
It was cool in the
I know. It's like watching on DVD is not. Sorry, not audience. Watching on DVD
still looks good on Blu-ray, but yeah. It was really
the
cool.
The 3D was, I imagine, the selling point on that. But I will champion I Love You, Philip Morris, because I saw it over award season. And it's such an odd movie. I don't think it works exactly because it's like tonally kind of all over the place. It's kind of.
Like, and it has nothing to do with cigarettes.
No, it has nothing to do with cigarettes. It's about Ewan McGregor and Jim Carrey played two gay men who meet each other in prison and fall in love.
Yeah.
And their performances are the best thing about it. Like, that really anchors the film, especially Jim Carrey got a lot of press, but I think Ewan McGregor is better because he's just so like low-key and sensitive and cute. Mm.
I thought it worked. I definitely thought it worked. You're right. It's always with a true story, because it is a true story, it's always hard to kind of deliver that.
Yeah. And it seemed like it was winking a little too much while wanting you to invest in this character. So that I found that kind of difficult. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The stinker of the week is Little Fockers. Because do we need to explain? we'll just do the. Yeah. This is awful. Not worth checking out. But the review wrap up: Arthur, I said, kind of rocks. Hannah, I said, kind of sucks. Soul Surfer, I said, is right on the cusp. And you said, Your Highness, I think you said that's right on the cusp, kind of rocks.
Yeah, I said kind of rocks. It depends where you're coming at it from, I think.
Cool. Well, hey, we're going to sign off for now. Thank you, Elizabeth Rapp from Chud and various other sites. Chud and Film.
Film.com, yeah.
Yep, thank you for being on the show.
Thank you.
Next week
we'll
talk. It was fun. We'll do it again. We'll have you on again sometime. Right. And then we'll go. We'll team up on the Golden Briefcase guys, and they gotta have a sport.
It's gonna be like Wolverine and Sabretooth back to back.
That's right. See you next time.